No one was trampled. Safety is, it's all good. Well, I'm going to stay low here so y'all can look at this. I'm sure you'd rather look at that anyway. But I appreciate the opportunity. We're going to talk a little bit about blindness. We've been talking about the parables in our Sunday school class. This is going to touch on that a little bit and extend it a little bit further to a miracle that I think a lot of all the miracles, but this is one of my favorite stories in terms of one of the miracles that Jesus does. But the beginning of this and the title has to do with a song by Ray Stevens. They made me put this up so I wouldn't be flicking it with my pocket. There is none so blind as he who will not see. Now, if you remember, Ray Stevens was like a 70s, and he wrote such classics as Guitar Zan and Ahab Dayrab and the Mississippi Squirrel Revival. But this is an absolutely wonderful song. It's a beautiful song, and it has to do with what we're going to talk about, you know, whether we're, you know, blind, what kind of blindness we have, because we really all have it. And a problem with Jesus and his efforts to bring the world to God in his time were that the leaders were blind, and he says, can a blind man lead a blind man? You know, and so he's questioning the leaders, and in sort of the famous Matthew 23rd chapter where he really kind of gets set off against the leaders, I just listed what he calls them. He calls them hypocrites several times. He calls them blind guides, blind fools, and blind men. Now, if you're sitting there, that's hard to take. You know, he's aiming that right at the teachers. And he also calls them snakes, brood of vipers. Calls them blind Pharisees. I forgot to put that blind in red. I mean, it's pretty vicious attack in a way, but what had they been doing to him? I just want to show this a little bit schematic form. I call them the group of those against Jesus. They probably had some other name, but what they did is they would meet to attack their plan, to plan their attack, and they would figure out, okay, we're going to ask him this question, and there's no way out. And then they would do it, and guess what? It would fail. Jesus, you know, showed them up for what they were, and then they'd go back in their little meeting area, and they'd say, okay, we got to try something else. And they would try that, and that would fail. And in the meantime, Jesus is healing people and doing such great things that everybody's following him. And so after one of these in particular, when we talk about blindness, to me this is the essence of it. The Pharisees see a man healed, and they go immediately and say, we got to kill this guy. Now, if that's not blindness, I don't know what it is. Now, hopefully our blindness isn't at that level. But they did eventually, you know, carry out that plan and were successful, or at least they thought. But as we know, it was only temporary, and Jesus rose from the dead. And can you imagine they're going, it's like Herod did when he said, I thought I killed that guy. I thought I killed John the Baptist. Who is this guy? And you can think of the Pharisees thinking the same thing. I thought we killed this guy. What happened? It just blew apart. So anyway, we're going to talk about whether we can see or not. And I forgot to start the timer, so try to subtract a few seconds from that. But I don't know if you, the story's told of when I was young, that when things didn't go my way, I would just cover my eyes and the world would go away. And that's essentially the kind of blindness we're talking about. Let's just hide our eyes. And if we don't see it, then it doesn't exist. And so I've been kidded about that all my life. But Blaise Pascal just said, you know, we have enough light to believe, and there's enough darkness to hide if we want to. And that's kind of what the parables were about. And Jesus talked about that. And he says, that's why I'm speaking to you in this way. By the way, if you get bored like I do, you can read everything. I'm not going to touch on everything in the slides, so just keep reading the slides. But he says, you know, these people are, they're not really seeing, they're not really understanding, they're not really trying to. And their hearts have become calloused. You know, after doing this for so long, you get used to it, and things don't bother you anymore. And so I want to sort of bracket the lesson with this at the front and the next few verses at the end to talk about, you know, this looks like there's no hope, but there really is. And I want to talk about three stories, and I'll try to do it quickly. The rich man and Lazarus, which was a parable, the Good Samaritan, which was a parable, and the man born blind, which was a true event. Not that the others probably weren't true, I don't know, but they were called parables. And so I want to particularly talk about that parable. First of all, I'm not going to read everything, but there's a summary of the rich man and Lazarus. I think we all know this story. Rich man lived in luxury. The Lazarus was disabled in some way, kept by the gate, rich man, you know, just right at the front there, and goes by all the time and does nothing to help him. And so one day they both die, and the rich man's, you know, looking from his vantage point in torment, and he sees Lazarus in Abraham's bosom, and he still doesn't get it. You know, this is true blindness as well. And he's in there saying, you know, Abraham, you got to get Lazarus to help me. You know, he's still my servant, isn't he? And so that's the kind of blindness we want to look at. So if you just ignore somebody, we may not think that's blindness, but it really is. It's just a different form. It's kind of a conscious form of it. So I like to do like a structure of things. And so those who've been in class know that I sort of beat these things to death. But these three stories have a similar structure. And I've got it listed here. If it's in green, if you can see the green, which you can't really see the green, but it's a little different than the other two stories. But there's perhaps a trigger that starts the story in the Bible. There's a person in need who's disabled. There's some kind of reaction from the leaders or even from family. Now, in this case, the person doesn't get any short-term help. You know, Lazarus just is there until he dies. Now, you might consider somebody laid him there at the gate, so he did get some kind of help, but not from the rich man. And but he gets help long-term. He's in the bosom of Abraham for forever. And the helper leaves the unhelpful one alone. In other words, Abraham lets the rich man... He wanted to be alone. He wanted to ignore Lazarus, and so now he's there. You know, he's what he wants, sort of. He didn't realize it didn't like it, though. And the unhelpful one is then kind of looked down on. You know, rich man wasn't helpful. He's the bad guy in the story. And then Jesus gives a lesson. So when we think about Lazarus, we think about what were his qualifications. You know, we don't know anything about Lazarus. We don't know whether he was good or bad. Whether he was a Jewish, he wouldn't even know race or anything. So there's a point in this lesson, and there's a parable and parallel in each of these stories as to, you know, what our qualifications are. And you might think in this sense, who is Lazarus's neighbor? Well, it's obvious. I mean, he's right at the gate of the rich man. You know, no one's closer than the rich man. Rich man is his neighbor. And so the rich man was also blind to this need. So now we'll go quickly to the Good Samaritan, kind of summarize that. We know this story, man is beaten, left by the road. Jesus is sort of tested. This is one of those testing instances where they're trying to make Jesus look bad in front of everybody. And so, but Jesus tells this story after the man says, "Who's my neighbor?" And Jesus tells the story of the Good Samaritan. Priests and Levi pass by, don't do anything. The Samaritan, the bad guy in all Jewish thought, comes by and helps this man and actually gives money for an extended care program. So it's another form of blindness. These leaders pass by on the other side. They think, if I don't touch him, if I just get as far away as I can, then it'll be okay. And I got business, you know. And it turns out the Samaritan had business too, but he still stopped and helped the man who had been robbed. And so in this structure, we see these common points that we'll see in the next story, too. There's a trigger. There's something that causes Jesus to either do something or to say something. There's a person in need. There's a reaction from the leaders. The person gets help right then, and then he gets long-term help. The helper leaves the helped one alone for a while, and the helper is looked down on, and a lesson is made. So we see all these elements in the Good Samaritan. You know, the Good Samaritan, who would have thought he would be the hero of any story that any teacher would have told teaching the Jews? And again, if you look at the robbed man, what were his qualifications? We don't know anything about him. We don't know what nationality he was or whether he was a good man or a bad man. We don't know that the Samaritan expected anything from him. The Samaritan didn't say, you know, I'm going to leave this man with you and take care of him, and then he'll pay out of his own pocket whatever he owes left, because... I mean, he's the one being healed. Samaritan didn't say that. He said, "I'll take care of it." So the man had no obligation. He's the one injured, and it's a thing about grace. He doesn't have to pay it back. So we ask, who is his neighbor? And that's what Jesus was saying. Who was the neighbor to the man? And it turns out it was the Samaritan, and the only man that wasn't blind to his need. So there's a sense of priorities. You know, we can all do our spiritual business. As Morris said earlier today, we can be our professional Christians and do what's on paper is supposed to be right, but unless we do things from our heart and really see the needs, we're not really doing what God wants. And the religious people in this quote, William Neal says, they would not even have let the Samaritan in the temple. And yet, who's the man that's really doing what God wills? So that's what we have to do, is try to understand what God really wants and what is the whole point of things, and that's goodness. And we see that Jesus is sort of like the Good Samaritan in that he stands up for what's good, and there's a real parallel there. So anyway, I say all of that to try to prepare for this miracle. I think this is just a very interesting miracle. I think it's unique in a lot of ways. It has the same structure as the Good Samaritan. There's something that triggered Jesus into doing this. There's a person in need. There's a reaction from the spiritual leaders. Person gets short-term help. Person gets long-term help. The helper leaves the helped one alone, and the one helping is looked down on. And then the lesson is made in the passage. So, now, I just put this up. It's an eye chart, what we call an eye chart. I don't expect you to read this. But look at, this is the story. What's in blue is where Jesus is involved. I don't think there's another story like this in the Bible. Jesus is always in the midst of everything. But what Jesus does here is he deals with this man and he goes off somewhere. And look at how many verses are there just dealing with the man who was healed and his struggle. You know, and he's left all alone in this struggle, as we'll see. I just think it's very interesting. And that's one reason I really like this, and we'll talk about it in a minute, is that Jesus comes back to find this man. And I just think that's what Jesus does for us. So I have another little schematic. It's interesting, the beginning of this story is a little different between these two. In one sense, the Good Samaritan, there's something evil done. And in the beginning of this miracle, there's something good done. Well, you think the reaction would be a little different, but there's sort of the same reaction. So with the Pharisees, it didn't matter if there was evil done or good done. They didn't like it. They didn't want to be involved. They didn't want anybody else to be involved. And so, you know, once we get past that point, we have a healing by an outcast, the Good Samaritan in one case, and Jesus in the other, because he was not accepted by the Pharisees. And then there's a long-term care provider. You know, we all trying to pad our 401ks for long-term care, and Jesus really provides that. So I want to go through the miracle real quick, and again, I'm not going to read everything, but this is just a situation where Jesus is walking along, and he sees a man blind from birth, and the disciples ask him. The disciples have almost this same reaction, you know. It's not, oh my, can we help this man? It's like, well, you know, this is an academic question. Who sinned? Somebody must have sinned. Was it him or his parents? And, you know, so often we're trying to find out who's guilty, you know, the search for the guilty. And Jesus says, you know, you've got it all wrong. And you just don't really understand what's going on. But he actually says that what's happened to this man is something so that the work of God can be shown, the goodness of God. And so in doing this, he spit on the ground and made some mud with saliva and put it on his eyes. And when I was reading this, I just thought, my mother would just, I don't know. Mother and mud didn't really go together. And I just thought, you know, I wonder how she felt about this parable. You know, and on the eyes, goodness gracious. But anyway, he did this, and then he sent the man off. He sent the man and said, go wash, and you'll be healed. And so the man went and washed, and he came home seeing. I think that's a great little line. He came home seeing. And it's just just a wonderful thing. It's the power of God. But Jesus disappears out of the story for a while. And this poor man, you know, everybody jumps on him because they just can't believe something good could happen, really. And so his neighbors and those who formerly had seen him begging said, is this the same guy? He can't be the same guy. He's sinned now. I mean, it looks like him, but, you know, it's his evil twin or his good twin or something. And so they ask him, and they demand it. And look how friendly they are. You know, here's a guy that's been healed, and they're demanding, who did this? It's not about, you know, how do you feel? You know, remember the report, how do you feel about being able to see again? You know, what do you think, you know? And so they say, the man, he's blind. He says, some guy came up, and he put something on my eyes and told me to, you know, he didn't take me to the pool. I don't know if somebody did. Blind man had to find the pool by himself. And all of a sudden he can see. He'd never seen Jesus. And so they're asking him, where is this guy? And the guy's going like, I should know. I didn't even see him. And so it's just interesting how they sort of attack this guy. So the next wave is the religious leaders. So all these friends bring him to the Pharisees. And the Pharisees, and of course, here's the thing that really upsets them. Jesus did it on the Sabbath. You know, broke the cardinal rule of all goodness. You don't do it on the Sabbath. And so they ask him, and the guy says, you know, I don't really know. But some guy came along, he put mud on my eyes, and now I can see. And the Pharisees say, the man can't be from God because he did this on the Sabbath. And it's almost like you should reject this miracle. Take it back. You know, there's something wrong about it. It should be voided because he did it on the Sabbath. And I'm going to imagine the man's going like, you know, you guys are crazy. And so there was some division in the Pharisees. But then they turn again to him and they say, what do you have to say about him? It was your eyes he opened. And the man replies, well, he must be a prophet. Well, I would kind of jump to the same conclusion. Here's a man of God. And it's so simple. You know, this we'll see in a minute. The man's blind, but he's not stupid. You know, we just think this man doesn't have any skills, and he does. And so they say, well, we can't trust this guy. Let's go find his parents. And they bring the parents in. Can you imagine doing that? Is this your son? And the parents are a little uneasy about the whole thing because they know they'll get thrown out of the synagogue if they say too much. And they say, he's of age. Ask him. He speaks for himself. And he did very well, I think. And that's the beauty of this story. Here's a man who didn't let the Pharisees back him down. He just kept coming at it, said, you know, and he got a little bit more forceful every time. And so they say, you know, give glory to God because the man who healed you, or you say healed you, is a sinner. And so the man says, you know, I don't know about all that. It's all theology. He says, I know one thing. I was blind, and now I see. It's pretty straightforward. But did they accept it? And so he actually accused them of maybe wanting to be his disciples, a little bit of sarcasm there. And so then they hurled insults at him and said, you know, we're disciples of Moses. Well, actually, in the story of the rich man, asked Abraham to get Lazarus to take him to earth again and so he can warn his brothers. And Jesus, or Abraham, says, if they don't understand Moses right now, they're not going to get it no matter what. So there's a little bit of this, you know, they think we're disciples of Moses, we got it covered, we're safe. And so they're still, it's their sense of superiority in a way that's got them thinking, you know, they've got it covered, and yet it's what's causing them to be blind. So there's another wave of inquisition, and the man's holding his own. I just love the way he does that. He may not have the right arguments, but he's not letting the Pharisees back him down. And so there's a little bit of a more discussion. And the Pharisees get so mad that they just throw him out of the synagogue. Now, back in this day, this was a big deal. This is like being thrown out of Manchester, which perhaps not quite the same. I mean, when I was growing up, everybody wanted to be thrown out of Manchester. But there's a lot of them back now. But you think being totally isolated from the religious community. And so you think... Think of the blind man's day. He starts out as a normal day. He goes to his spot, and he's got his cup or whatever, and then things happen. The day explodes from that point. A great man comes and heals him. He has to find his way to the wash, and then he's healed, and he can see again. And immediately, he starts getting grief from everybody. You know, is anybody happy about him being able to see? Even his parents are a little bit iffy. You know, I don't know, just you deal with him. Don't mess with us. So he has to defend himself, and he does a very good job. And the spiritual leaders get so mad they throw him out. So, you know, at this point, think about being the blind man. Think about thinking, goodness gracious, what a day. You know, am I better off or not? You know, I can see, but now I can see what sorry state I'm in, you know. So is that good or bad? And this is why I think that Jesus coming back is the beautiful part of this story. Jesus hears about it. Of course, he knew about it. And he goes back and he finds him. And he says, do you believe in the Son of Man? The man's ready to believe. He says, I don't know. Tell me about it. His heart is open. And what after such a day, you know, I'd have said, you know, I just want to go home and see what I'm doing for a while. You know, And Jesus says, you know, I'm the man who healed you. I'm the Son of Man, meaning, you know, the one that was expected, the Messiah. And so the man says, Lord, I believe. And he begins immediately to worship him. So Jesus goes back when this man's in doubt, wondering what in the world went wrong today. And Jesus goes back and shows him that he is indeed a lot better off. You don't need that synagogue. We're in a different kingdom now. We have a new kingdom coming. And I think that's the beauty of that story. And so the lesson he gives is, for judgment I've come into the world so that the blind will see, and so those who see or think they see will become blind. And so the Pharisees are hanging around, and they're like insulted again, you know. This is the cause of the problem. Are we blind too? And Jesus says, if you were blind, you wouldn't be guilty of sin. But now that you claim you can see, your guilt remains. He's, you know, dealing with this whole idea of blindness. And whether you realize it or not, you know, do you realize that you're blind and you're going off the track? It's just kind of interesting. You know, the blind will see, those who think they can see will go blind. So Jesus, in a typical example, turns the world upside down, inside out, makes us rethink everything. So I won't go through the summary. If you compare these two stories, you find these similar passages in the scriptures. We think about the blind man. We've looked at the other two people who were disabled, and we think, you know, what were the blind man's qualifications? He was a Jew, but the question was he some kind of special sinner that he was blind? Now, a man born blind, I mean, how can you say the man sinned and caused this? And you have to be started pretty early doing the sinning to be born blind. I don't know. You just got to think about that. What kind of obligation did he have? And again, there was no obligation laid on him, basically, except to believe and to worship. And that's really where we stand. He was a citizen of the kingdom in terms of neighbors. Jesus kind of gave him a whole new set of neighbors. So what about us? You know, what kind of qualifications do we have? And I think we have to align ourselves with these injured parties, and we need to be careful and think about how we align ourselves with the ones that are blind as well. And the good news is that God can open our eyes, and that's what the power of the gospel really does for us. And so we need to pray that he opens our eyes, not just to his goodness, but to the needs of others. And I just used a couple of scriptures. On the road to Emmaus, the idea is suddenly they opened these two guys' eyes. You know, they were seeing, they saw Jesus, didn't realize what it was all about. And then I think about Saul, who became Paul, and how he was blind. And then these things fell from his eyes like scales. And I think that God has the power to do that so that we can truly see. And then the song that we sing so many times, I was lost and now I'm found, was blind, but now I see. And that's what Christ does for us. So Helen Keller, as you know, was born blind. And it turns out she wasn't stupid either. She says, the only thing worse than being blind is having sight but no vision. Basically being able to see but not really perceive. And that's what Jesus was talking about. And so in Matthew, Jesus said, blessed are your eyes because they do see. So this is the end of that passage we started out with. And instead of just saying, you know, people aren't seeing or hearing or anything, they're ignoring me, he's saying, you know, I'm now dealing with people who are beginning to see. Remember when his disciples finally sort of figured it out, he says, now you believe, finally. And so we're all in that state. We just have to come to that realization of what God is about. And this is the message of hope that we have, that God opens our eyes and lets us see what his work really is and what his will really is and what his goodness really is. If there's anyone here today that in any way wants to embrace that goodness and come to God and to be one of his kingdom, won't you come now as we stand this and sing this song?